This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout was first elected to the Wisconsin legislature in the fall of 2006. She's a farmer on her family's farm near Alma. Before ultimately deciding to seek a third four-year term in the state Senate, she briefly considered running for governor against Republican Scott Walker. Also on the ballot in Wisconsin's 31st State Senate District is Republican challenger Mel Pittman of Plum City. He too is a dairy farmer and has experience in government as a former member of the Pierce County Board of Supervisors. Western Wisconsin's 31st State Senate District includes voters in all of Buffalo and Pepin counties, plus most of Trempealeau and Pierce counties, and parts of Dunn, Eau Claire, and Jackson counties. Some of the communities include Alma, Whitehall, Galesville, Arcadia, Mondovi, and Black River Falls. Vinehout and Pittman participated in a broadcast forum recorded earlier this week in Wisconsin Public Radio's Eau Claire studios. It includes audience questions, but please note, because this was recorded earlier this week, no new calls can be accepted. The forum's moderator is WPR reporter Rich Kramer.
So Mel Pittman, why you for State Senate 31?
Rich, I have an interest in running for state senate. It's something that I've gotten involved in politics along the way over the last 15 years of my life as a dairy farmer, and I've served in different capacities along the way, and so I do have an interest in serving at this level. I was encouraged by others to seek out this opportunity to serve, and I believe I can do a better job representing the values of the residents within the 31st Senate District.
All right. State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, why another 4 years for you?
I've spent a great deal of time listening to the people in Western Wisconsin and taking their message to Madison. It's been a very difficult 4 years for many of the people in Western Wisconsin. Not only has the economy taken a bite out of their pocketbook, but they've had to deal with a lot of problems, whether it be poor funding for rural schools or sand mines popping up in their neighborhood. And I have been that voice in Madison. I've proposed two alternative budgets. I spent a great deal of time trying to understand what's happening in Madison and relay that to the people in Western Wisconsin through a weekly column that I write. And there's a lot more work that needs to be done. We're very close to convincing the necessary number of people that we need to change the school funding formula. We're also very close to getting some changes in at least the staffing at DNR for regulating the sand mines. There's a lot more work that needs to be done.
And with that first question, it's not necessarily directly tied to the district, but it's an issue statewide. Governor Walker has said that he'd like to begin drug testing recipients of unemployment insurance and the state's food stamp program, also known as food share. Mel Pittman, I'll start with you. Do you support this idea, and do you think it'll save any money for the state?
I do support that idea or that concept, because I think that if people need to be on taxpayer-funded programs like that, they need to be doing what they can to hold up their end of the situation in regards to receiving these benefits. If they are using drugs unnecessarily or otherwise, you know, where are they getting the resources to do that and so on and so forth? The programs from the government or from the state here in this case should be intended for health, nutrition, things like that, not for other purposes of pleasure or others like that.
To subsidize a life
you
like
bet.
That. Gotcha. Senator Vinehout, your thoughts on Governor Walker's ideas for drug testing food stamp recipients?
This is nothing more than an election year soundbite. The governor justifies this by getting ready for a job. Well, I'm thinking maybe we should drug test the CEOs, and let's start with the governor. He may be getting ready for a new job.
Do you think it could save money for the state?
Oh, absolutely not. It's ridiculous. Absolutely not. Think about DNA testing. Think about the millions that it costs to DNA test every single person that's been arrested. We have to weigh what the cost is versus what the benefits are. This is nothing more than election year politics.
You're listening to the 31st State Senate District Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. They are Mel Pittman. He's a Republican from Plum City, running for the 31st State Senate District seat. Kathleen Vinehout is the Democratic incumbent. She's held the seat since 2006. She is from Alma. Another big issue in the news recently has been voter ID. Federal Appeals Court has struck down a lawsuit blocking the state's law, requiring voters to show a government-approved photo identification in order to vote, clearing the way for the law to be in effect for this fall's general election. Some are calling this law common sense. They've been fighting for it for a while now, since 2011, I believe. Others call it disenfranchisement. Where do you stand, Senator Vinehout?
I voted against this very restrictive bill. The bill was modeled after Georgia and Indiana. Georgia and Indiana have some of the lowest voter participation rates in the entire country. Historically, Wisconsin has had very, very high voter participation, not quite as high as Minnesota, but close. What this bill does is make it more difficult for certain groups of people to be able to vote. And since there's been a confusion about whether or not this bill has been in place, I have fielded dozens and dozens of calls from people, from students to the disabled to the homebound elderly, who are saying, what do I have to do? All of a sudden, people are worried about going to the polls. I had one fellow tell me he hadn't voted in 3 years because he was so worried that he didn't have the proper documentation. And that was before this bill became before the court order was to put this provision in place. I don't think this is a good idea, and the folks that I've talked to who tell me that their vote doesn't make a difference, I keep telling them, well, if it doesn't make a difference, why are they trying to take your vote away? We need to open wide the doors of voting and increase voter participation, not decrease it.
The Republicans obviously have control currently of both houses, the legislature, the Assembly, and the Senate. If it were to flip, would you and your Democratic colleagues push to repeal the law?
Absolutely. There are many different photo ID laws that are much less restrictive than the current photo ID law. So when the Republicans put this bill in place, they weren't just looking at identification. They were looking at such strict identification that it would make it difficult for certain types of populations to vote. And I would add, all of the changes around absentee voting has made it difficult. And I don't think that it's just Democrats that are going to stay home on Election Day because they have a difficult time figuring out the rules. I've talked to a great deal of rural people that are independent voters or lean Republican, and they said this is a bill that hurts busy people. It hurts people who don't have the time to figure out the details, which could be anyone from any economic strata or any partisanship.
I don't mean to keep following up, but it sounded to me like you might not be against the idea, the concept of voter ID.
Well, all I'm saying is that this is a bill that was drafted to be particularly restrictive.
Okay.
If there is some type of middle ground, and I can work that out with my colleagues, there may be a bill that I would support, but not this one. This one is drafted to be very restrictive, and I'm afraid it's going to succeed in pushing down the number of people that come to the polls.
Mel Pittman, your thoughts on the state's voter ID law passed in 2011. Finally, the courts have struck down a lawsuit that's been blocking it since then. I guess we did have experience with this lobbying effect for a lower turnout primary, but this is going to be the first real test. What are your thoughts?
Rich, I think it's important that we do have something in place like the voter ID bill to help screen people that are coming in to vote. I'm not opposed to people legitimately coming in and voting. It's just an issue of, let's make sure that the people that are citizens in this country, whatever, that have the proper residency, that they can actually get out and vote. We use proof of residence. We use photo IDs for almost everything else we do, even for our food stamp program, things like that. They need to share, or they need to show proof of their residency and who they are in order to qualify for benefits. So I think the impact will be very minimal. What it's going to do to restrict anyone that might not qualify to vote. But on the other part, like I said, almost everything else we do, you want to fly on an airplane, jet to go somewhere, you need to show an ID and your residence. So I really question how much damage it's going to do. And some of the judges that have heard these cases have openly admitted that there is voter fraud going on. But they just say, well, it's not that much. Well, when you get in a tight election, a little bit of voter fraud can make a difference, and I think those are important issues to also be considered.
If I could follow up, a couple things. First, this law, the court has decided to lift the injunction, which means this law will be in effect in an election that when the decision was made, it was I think it was like 2 months or less from the election. Do you think that's too soon to get the clerks up to speed and or all the poll workers to be retrained?
It's going to be a lot of work in a short time for these people to get up to speed. And I've heard from some town clerks and whatnot that have said, you know, they're concerned because of such a short notice. But, you know, this thing has been in and out of courts all for ever since it was passed. And I don't know, you know, if there's ever an ideal time other than, you know, from the time it was originally passed that was going to be in place. And so I guess it's when in front of us right now today we deal with it as best we can, and we make it work.
And the other follow-up I'd like to throw in there, you know, I've heard that argument all the time that you need an ID to do all these other things. Well, those are things that you elect to do, and people, a lot of people, you know, voting is a right. So is this by definition, would be restricting a right, wouldn't it be?
Not necessarily. There's still enough other things that you can use. You need your vote, you know, your photo ID for. Mm-hmm. I believe that it's not unduly restrictive at all. And voting is a right and a privilege. We want to do it right. We want to do it correctly as possible. We don't want to have shenanigans going on that would alter the results of the voting.
You're listening to an election forum on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Today, candidates in Wisconsin's 31st State Senate District, incumbent Kathleen Vinehout, a Democrat from Alma, and Republican challenger Mel Pittman of Plum City. The forum was recorded earlier this week at WPR's Eau Claire Studios. The moderator is WPR's Rich Kramer.
The state's frac sand mining industry has grown to be the largest producer in the country of the silica sand used for hydraulic fracturing in other parts of the country. During the past few years, there have been bitter struggles in towns over what the role of local governments are in regulating these industrial sand mines. In the last year or so, Republicans have introduced two bills aimed at limiting that local control in order to, they say, level the playing field for the industry. What is the proper role of state government in regulating frac sand mining? Mel Pittman.
Rich, I believe in local control first for frac sand mining issue. And with that said, you know, I've listened, I went down, I talked to people in the Whitehall area in particular because that's where a lot of it's happening in Trumbull County. And what I found out is that the county and the local towns, I may have put a moratorium in place, I've turned some down, and then all of a sudden the cities are annexing properties that mm-hmm. are way outside their normal jurisdiction and are allowing the sand mining industry to move forward. So I'm concerned about the cooperation between local units of government and how that's occurring and why that's occurring. As far as the state getting involved, I believe that the state should be involved from the DNR aspect of it as far as are they meeting the regulations and whatnot that the DNR has to provide oversight on. I'm not sure that we want the state government to come in and say this is how it's got to be done. I think the local people are the ones that have to live within those communities. They have to live with how things are moving forward through the processing, the mining issues, all those things. I think they should have a say-so on what they want within their communities.
With regard to the annexations, it seems like these companies are convincing local governments like cities and villages to annex their properties so that they can kind of get around some of the local, the county regulations, which are fairly strict on paper. Do you think that Trumbull County is being too strict?
I'm not sure it is. I know that they put moratoriums in place because a number of these counties, and Buffalo is another one, they've gotten overwhelmed with the amount of sand mining coming into that community. Mm-hmm. And they're not sure how to deal with it in an effective way. The other part of it is with sand mining, you know, because it came so hard and fast, we want to make sure we have the right protocols and regulations in place so that as the mining industry continues and then at some day it's going to exit our areas, that we have all the procedures in place so that whether it's reclamation and how we deal with those issues so that things can be put back in as best a condition as possible after the industry is closed.
Senator Vinehout, what do you think the – it's a big question. What do you think the proper role of the state is in how industrial sand mines are regulated?
Well, I like the approach that Minnesota has taken. They recently passed a law that provided assistance to local governments and clarified what the options were for the local governments and made it clear that local government had the authority to site, but that they also could decide how that mine was going to operate, and here are some ideas to consider when you're writing your ordinance. It wasn't a mandate. It was permissive. It was here are some ideas, and we can provide technical assistance. And I like that approach. My opponent in the last several months has made it appear as if he agrees with me on my approach to sand mining. But I have to tell you, on my way to Eau Claire this morning, I drove by a mine that's about 8 miles away from me. And the first and only yard sign I saw in front of that mine was his. And I think that he's done a fair job of obfuscating what's really going on. And I know that the industry very, very much wants state preemption. And they have worked very, very hard to try and convince the people in Madison. And there are a lot of my colleagues here in Western Wisconsin on the other side of the aisle that have taken the time to say to their local people that they don't want the state preemption. But then when it comes to those votes down in Madison, I don't see them out there testifying at the hearings against these bills. I don't see them making public statements against those bills. And there are a lot of people in the last several months that have said to me, what if this bill is in the budget? Will the Republicans vote against it? Will they vote against the budget if this bill is in the budget? Which is it's a fear. And I would say 80% of the people in Western Wisconsin in my neighborhood are opposed to what's happening, especially the getting out from under the county ordinances by annexation in these towns with what I call a balloon on a string annexation, which is something that I believe absolutely should be prohibited. And I wrote a bill to do that, and will be working as soon as this election is over. God willing, the people send me back to keep working. I will be working on getting this bill passed in a bipartisan approach. But there has to be very, very strong leadership from Western Wisconsin, or cities and counties will lose their ability to stop these mines or to put brakes on the practices that sometimes are okay and sometimes are very difficult for neighbors to live near.
And as far as you know, the state preemption, you've written a number of bills. I think it's 5 at least so far.
And another bill that would give DNR the money to hire the number of inspectors that DNR said that they need, which is 12. And they currently have 2. And from what I've heard, those 2 positions are not, they're not up to speed in terms of being filled in full time.
So the bills that you've introduced, those, I mean, isn't that another example of the state kind of reaching in and trying to do the locals' business?
Well, think about what the bills do. What the bills do is protect people so that local government cannot put a mine in place without ever having a hearing. The biggest concern I get from people is there's a sand mine going in down the road from me, and I didn't know anything about it. And I don't have any say in it, and shouldn't I have some say in it? And this has to do with the approach that the local people have taken. There are some places that are completely unzoned, and sand mines have converted from cranberry operations, and there's never been a local hearing. This is something that people tell me is wrong.
A reminder, we're talking with the candidates for the 31st State Senate District, Kathleen Vinehout, a Democratic incumbent state senator from Alma. Mel Pittman is the Republican challenger. We go to Colfax. Willem, you're on the air.
Hi. I had a comment about the other gentleman's, I think he's running for the Republican Party.
Yes.
His comment about voter ID, that this is more than just, like Ms. Vinehout said, it's more than just a showing your picture. There's already things in place, laws in place in Wisconsin about you know, proving who you are with either, you know, proof of residency and things like that. And there's this idea that it's not just about photo ID. It's about restricting hours for early voting. It's about all sorts of other things that have nothing to do with protecting the sanctity of the vote or all the other buzzwords that are around about this issue. But I also heard him speak of reclamation, and reclamation is something in regards to sand mining that reclamation, people shouldn't be confused with reclamation and restoration. These lands can never be restored, and there's never been a reclaimed mine in anywhere that has been reclaimed to agriculture. It won't be able to be farmed for probably generations because soil structure and all those things, not simply like filling in a hole with what they call the overburden and then having it restored to anything useful. And I think the worst part of this sand mining is that I believe it does real economic harm to the areas where it is done because it's a mono system. No one wants to move to a strip mining area. No young entrepreneurs, no young people, no families want to move into these areas. They become sort of a strip mining desert. Like, who wants...
Willem,
there's no tourism in West Virginia.
We hear you loud and clear, Willem. We got the statements. Did you have a specific question, or you just wanted to air it out?
Yeah, well, no, my specific question would be, why restrict the hours of voting if it has something to do with making sure that the right people are voting, which is a problem that doesn't even exist. I think there was someone that voted 13 times for Scott Walker in Milwaukee, and that was the case that was cited in the federal hearing about it. So
okay.
It's not a problem. We should be. The whole point is, he said, it's a privilege. It's a right. This is a democracy. Getting the people to participate should be the, you know, what we're aiming for. Not see if we can restrict voting. That's the right direction.
Thanks so much for the call, Willem. We appreciate it. The number to call is 800-228-5615. Mel Pittman, any thoughts on this, the legislature restricting early voting?
Well, I think what's more important is the fact that we have informed voters, people that understand who the candidates are and where they stand on their positions and can make good choices in that matter. If you're going into a polling place and you're going eeny, meeny, miny, mo and deciding who you're going to vote for, you know, is that in the best interest of the people, of yourself and the people that you live around? So I think it's more important that we have informed voting going on rather than scrutinizing all the other ones. And if you want to use Governor Walker, for example, the one he used and said that there, he was voted for by multiple times, I'm sure you could pick out any different situation in a more larger metropolitan area where people have the option or the ability to do that. And I think that's one area where maybe technology can help us out. When someone votes, have a statewide system where, that person's already been identified as being a voter somewhere. They don't have the option of going to vote somewhere else in another election somewhere else.
All right. Senator Vinehill, do you have any thoughts on this?
The voter fraud in Wisconsin is very, very, very low. There was a study that was done by the Brennan Institute that we talked about the day this bill passed, and the study showed that the people who were responsible for voter fraud, and they were very, very few, were felons, convicted felons. And in Wisconsin, the convicted felon who is still on probation or parole cannot vote. But when they're off papers, then they can vote. The felons that did vote didn't realize that they were off papers, that they had to be off papers before they could vote. But that's a person who the driver's license requirement wouldn't have stopped. They weren't trying to impersonate someone else. They were coming in and saying, hey, I'm John Smith and I want to vote. But the problem was that they were still on probation. Voter impersonation, to my knowledge, has never, ever happened. That is the crime that a photo ID stops. And as far as Willem and the difficulty in restricting voting hours, I absolutely agree. I often vote on my clerk's kitchen table on the weekend before the election when I find out that I have to be in Madison on Tuesday. I can't do that anymore. A whole lot of rural people do that. Now the voting hours are very restrictive for somebody that has to commute, for somebody that has three jobs, for somebody that maybe works a long ways away from their home in rural Wisconsin. They're going to have a difficult time getting to that clerk's kitchen table between the hours of 8 and 5 or it's done to make it harder for people, and when fewer people vote, Republicans win.
You're listening to a candidate forum for Wisconsin's 31st State Senate District on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. The forum was recorded earlier this week in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Eau Claire. The moderator is WPR's Rich Kramer. The incumbent is Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma, who has represented the district since 2007. She's seeking a third four-year term. Before deciding to run for re-election, she toyed with the idea of running for governor against Scott Walker. Vinehout's Republican challenger is Mel Pittman of Plum City, a former member of the Pierce County Board of Supervisors for a number of years. The person who wins the November 4th election will represent western Wisconsin's farmers in a largely rural district area between La Crosse and Eau Claire. The 31st Senate District includes Buffalo and Pepin counties, most of Pierce and Trempealeau counties, and parts of Eau Claire, Dunn, and Jackson counties. This forum continues in just a moment. Among the issues the candidates will discuss are campaign financing, a woman's right to government-supported reproductive health care, and same-sex marriage. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to the candidates' websites, as well as archives of other recent editions of Newsmakers. And if you'd like to share your comments or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. We're in the middle of an election forum with candidates in western Wisconsin's 31st State Senate District. The candidates are Republican Mel Pittman of Plum City, a dairy farmer, and former county supervisor in Pierce County. Also, incumbent State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, a Democrat whose family works on a farm near Alma. Vinehout has represented the mostly rural district since 2007. In the first part of Wisconsin Public Radio's 31st State Senate Forum, the candidates talked about the issue of frac sand mining, a highly contentious issue in many parts of the district. In this part of the forum, they'll talk, among other things, about issues related to nutrient management and how to best handle farm runoff. The forum took place earlier this week at our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Eau Claire and included questions from callers. Wisconsin Public Radio's Rich Kramer is the moderator.
Pepin County, we are off to, and Paul, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Thank you very much for taking my call. My issue here is on the drug testing of individuals that would receive food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
And my question would be to Mr. Pittman, and Senator Vinehout can respond also. But Mr. Pittman, would you also require that farmers, and I am one that goes to FSA and gets state's funds, should we also be drug tested every time we go into the office?
Hmm.
And how often would you drug test these people that are getting food stamps? Would this be a monthly thing, yearly thing, biannual? And the same with us farmers. Would it be every time we sign up? Would it be every time we go to the field? Or how often would we drug test the farmers or anyone else that is getting state monies?
Okay, thanks so much, Paul, for the question. I think as far as, I'm not sure what the governor's plan is as far as the food stamps and the drug testing, but I think Paul's making what's called the slippery slope argument, that if you do it for this group of people, what's to stop the state from doing it for others?
Well, I believe that it is important that people that are receiving benefits through government programs are doing it in a sense that the dollars are going for the program intended use, not necessarily for other purposes. For a farmer, if you have a CDL, another person, that truck driver, whatever, you have a CDL, you are, I believe it's at what they call an at-random drug test. They can stop you at any time within a reasonable amount and say, we need to do a urine sample, whatever the case might be, to do a drug test. That might be the best way of handling it. Just the fact that you may not know exactly when this could happen. And so I think that's something that should be looked at. As far as how far we go with that, I guess I, I'm not sure at this point how far we need to go with this situation, but it concerns me when the programs that we, you know, that people are using the funds for the programs in the intended way, not necessarily for other purposes.
Senator Vinehout, your thoughts? Do you think it would ever come to that, that farmers looking for FSA money be drug tested?
Well, Paul has an interesting point. Where do you stop? And that's why I made the comment about CEOs and tax breaks. Right now, we've got an agency in state government that was unable to verify any jobs created in the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Here's a good example of an agency that's not doing what the people set out for and asked it to do, and certainly what the people who voted for it said it would do. So do we drug test CEOs that have tax breaks? Well, of course, everybody would say absolutely not. But if we really want to know if the program is working, then that's why we have the Legislative Audit Bureau. That's why we do the work of the audit committee that I've been involved in for many years. And we look at how well that program is designed. We make sure that there are program integrity people, watchdogs, within the program. A good example is Wisconsin Shares, which was a program that helped people with child care when they were trying to get back on their feet. When that program, a $350 million program, passed in the late 90s under Republican rule, it had only one person that was in charge of program integrity that was in its watchdog, $350 million program. So it wasn't any surprise to me when we found out back in a few years ago that the program had a lot of fraud. And the legislature responded first with an audit, then with three separate bills to deal with that fraud. Absolutely, if there are dollars going out, we need to have people in place that are protecting the people's interest, which is why I've spent so much of my time in Madison working with the Joint Committee on Audit and acting as the steward of the people's money. But drug testing is a solution in looking for a problem.
Since you both are farmers or have been involved with farming in one way or another, I'm interested in getting some input on this. Nutrient management. The St. Croix and Mississippi rivers have a nutrient problem. They're overloaded with phosphorus and nitrogen, much of which comes from farm fields and feedlots. Not the only source by far, but a lot of it. And this has caused an extensive dead zone, you know, where the Mississippi empties into the Gulf. But right now, the state of Wisconsin can't require farmers to build new nutrient management systems without paying a cost share of around 70%. So how do we further control farm runoff on a voluntary basis? Or do you think the state should change some language and take a more active role in regulating and not have it be voluntary? Senator Vinehout.
I just met with the Triple County Extension agent just a few days ago, and we had an extensive conversation about this. And the part of the justification for the conversation had to do with what happened in Independence. In Independence, the mayor took a large sum of money for the city as a payment by the sand mine, and he wanted to dredge Bugle Lake. And that was one of his justifications for having the sand mine come into the city of Independence. And both I and the extension agent agreed that this was a bit of a difficult way to resolve a problem that had to do with problems upstream, had to do with the need for structures protecting stream banks, protecting the fields from erosion, and keeping the nutrients on the field where it belonged and not in the stream, and again with the soil. The problem we have is that both the bonding authority for structures to prevent erosion has been whittled away in the last 4 years, and the technical assistance for the people at the counties, the county conservation officers, have been whittled away. The state needs to step up to the plate and adequately fund conservation. And I can think of no better way than to describe what will happen than by talking about the beautiful streams that we have here in western Wisconsin and what we've been able to accomplish when the erosion structures are put in place. Recently, I was just at a opening of a trout stream in Wamandy. And, of course, God created the trout stream long ago, and and we didn't have to worry about him opening it. But the humans cleaned it up. And the cleanup made a huge difference in the fish population. population. And the local people in Buffalo County are saying, we've got an opportunity to bring in additional dollars to create the kind of agritourism that uses and shares the beauty of the land and the natural resources in a way that doesn't destroy it. And this is an example of why I wrote my alternative budget and where different choices could have been made in the last 4 years with exactly the same money. There were choices that were made by the people who voted for that budget and the governor that had a direct effect on what happens in Western Wisconsin. And this is a really good example of programs that had a real effect on what would happen and would have made a difference in whether or not the stream banks eroded and the terraces were put in place and all of the other conservation structures that we've known about and many, many farmers, including my farm, have practiced for many years.
Mel Pittman, your thoughts on this, the nutrient management issue, and I'm sure that you're familiar with it if you've got an active dairy farm.
Yes, we do have a nutrient management plan for our farm, but I guess I would start out on a little different note. Serving on county board for the past 10 years in Pierce County, I've been on the Land Conservation Committee for that number of years too, and so I dealt firsthand with local issues in regard to nutrient management, conservation measures, and the opportunity to control erosion. And I believe our best opportunity here is education. That's one of the primary things we worked on in Pierce County is educating the public about what are the resources that are out there that can help control erosion. It was unfortunate in some regards, you know, we had high corn and bean prices here the last couple of years. $7 corn meant there's a lot of ground that got tilled that normally shouldn't have been tilled. Corn was planted fence line to fence line, or maybe even the fence lines came out. And in western Wisconsin here, we had severe soil erosion that occurred when we had some horrific amounts of rainfall, 5 inches or more on an open field. And so that really opened up our eyes again to what are the issues we have to deal with here, whether it's structures or it's, you know, the nutrient management part of it is let's keep the nutrients on the field rather than in the stream. And so those are things that I think are important, and we need to work in those areas. There is funding out there. I testified before the last budget when they went around the different parts of the state, and I believe it was up in New Richmond, I believe was where they were at. I testified they're asking for the state to continue to fund conservation efforts, and the state did pick up and fund more than what they originally planned to. The state legislature did that. So we are getting funds out there. But one of the things at the local level, at the county level in particular, some of the scrutiny that's going on as far as the funds going to the counties is that a number of the land conservation departments have gotten merged into other departments within at the county level. So they're not a separate entity. And what the state has said, if you can show that those funds that we offer you for land conservation purposes, they have to be used for land conservation. They can't be used in another area within that county in a different department. And that's where some of the scrutiny, and I believe that's where Senator Vinehout is talking about some of the lack of funding or changes in funding, because those funds need to go directly to land conservation purposes and not for other purposes, whether it be land management or parks or other things like that. But getting back to the nutrient management portion, we talked a lot about no-till operations and things like that, where you're not disturbing the soil or very little except where you put the seed in the ground. And those are areas where I believe we can help educate the farming community. It's less expensive to put those crops in typically than it is to do a lot of tillage. And with $3 corn right now, there's going to be a lot more farmers opening their eyes. Yes, a lot of soil and nutrients went down the river. It's been going on for a long time. We need to get smarter as an agricultural population out here and realize that we can be more efficient and we can do a better job by protecting our soils and taking care of them.
You're listening to the 31st State Senate District Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. They are Mel Pittman. He's a Republican from Plum City, running for the 31st State Senate District seat. Kathleen Vinehout is the Democratic incumbent. She's held the seat since 2006. She is from Alma. From Eau Claire, this is Joan. Joan, you're on the air. Thanks so much for calling in. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I'd like to ask both Senator Vinehout and Mr. Pittman as to their thoughts regarding Walker administration's assault on a woman's right to make her own medical decisions and whether government has any business in the examination room with a woman and her physician. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Joan. I believe that could be a reference to the transvaginal ultrasounds or a whole number of issues. And Senator Vinehout, your thoughts?
Yeah, a whole number of issues is exactly the right way to say it. The last several years, we've seen an incredible increase in the bill, number of bills both introduced, debated, and passed that attack women's ability to control what happens to their own body. And this is it's absolutely horrible what's happened, and it's done for political reasons, and it affects women, and frankly, it affects poor women. It affects women who maybe don't have a doctor, don't have health insurance. Maybe you may have heard recently about one of the few clinics that are left, Planned Parenthood clinics closing in the eastern part of the state, and part of that had to do with the fact that the governor took the funding for women's reproductive health down to about, cut it by about 94%. It's absolutely an attack on the organizations that are able to provide and have for many, many years provided help to poor women who don't have access to a regular doctor. And it's become, I don't know how to describe it. It's become a horrible situation where women are subjected to procedures that have absolutely no medical need, and the state legislature, the Republicans who voted for this stuff, are voting for political reasons to create life, to create a more difficult life for many women that need access to health care.
Mel Pittman, your thoughts on some of the bills, including there was the no funding of the Planned Parenthood, and there was also this bill that requires women to seeking an abortion to get an ultrasound, a transvaginal ultrasound first. Do you support those measures?
Yes, I do. I do because I'm a pro-life candidate, and I believe that science has proven, for those that doubt it, in the past, science has proven that life begins at conception. And even though it can put women in a difficult situation, I believe it's important that we protect both life forms whenever it's possible. And so that's why I stand on that issue. And I think it's important that the ultrasound is just a means by which a woman can see that there is actually a live fetus inside her womb. My daughter actually does that procedure up in the Twin City area. She works there and does that procedure, and it's very interesting. I've seen it done on a person once to see the sonogram.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be moved a little bit at least by seeing that image and knowing that there's something else there. And like I said, even though it can be very difficult for women and they might face tough choices down the road, it's beyond me as a farmer, even someone that works with animals, not saying humans are the same category as animals quite, but to see life born anew again, it's hard for me to see a life destroyed like that. And those are the reasons why I support, the laws that have been passed recently, trying to lessen abortions and trying to help people understand what life is about.
Senator Vinehout, very quickly.
I have concerns about what my opponent was just talking about, because this is the party of supposedly small government. And small government is in our bedroom. And that's not small government to me. That's big government, way too big.
Mel Pittman.
Well, I'm going to disagree with Senator Vinehout in the sense that what happens in your bedroom is your own business. What happens after that affects other people, and that's where we need to be concerned.
This is related to campaign finance. Last month, a federal court decision struck down Wisconsin's $10,000 individual campaign donation limit for every state office except governor, I believe. Now, any one person can give unlimited amounts of money to a campaign in Wisconsin. Do you see this as a win for political speech? You know, the argument being speech is money, or a loss for those concerned about the influence of money in politics? And I'll start with you, Mal Pittman.
Well, I haven't seen that ruling. I've been busy trying to run my business and campaign, mm-hmm. so I haven't seen that ruling. But just from what you mentioned this morning, Rich, I guess I would have to look at it in more detail to see what it's all about. I know, for example, in my campaign, we've asked a lot of people for help financially. We have probably close to 250 to 260 individual donors. A lot of them have donated, you know, a small amount, $25, $50, whatever. Mm-hmm. We've had a few that have donated the maximum, which has been $1,000 per person. But I'm not sure what to think about this one. Like I said, it's pretty new. I haven't had a whole lot of time to think, you know, read it through and see what's there. I am concerned that some individuals might be able to unduly influence elections by being able to contribute too much money.
Senator Vinehout, your thoughts on that decision regarding the campaign limit, the cap?
It is creating a problem. There's certainly the appearance that large outside groups are buying the election, especially the governor's election in Wisconsin. Universally, Republicans, Democrats, Independents that I talk to are very unhappy with the amount of money in politics today. They feel as if corporations do not equal free speech, and that corporations are not people, and that money does not equal free speech. Just to clarify the ruling, it was a ruling on aggregate limits, meaning all put together. So the individual limits on $1,000 donation per candidate for the state senate, for example, is still in place. But the aggregate limits mean that you can have millions and put the individual limits and put the amount to the individual limit in any number of campaigns that you want. This allows very wealthy people to buy a large number or to have, as they might see, an investment in a large number of campaigns. And I don't have any problem with people being wealthy. I think that, you know, more power to them if they make lots of money. The problem I have is in buying government, and that is wrong, and we need to change our campaign finance laws.
Mel Pittman.
Well, I'd just like to counter Senator Vinehout and the fact that we did some little research, and when she got her campaign contributions, I believe for the last election cycle she was in, 75% of hers came from, or around 75% came from outside this district. So when she talks about buying an election, or, you know, people that have dollars to influence an election, sometimes that can be concerning, too, if the support is coming outside the district for someone that lives in that area.
That might be because when I was running, the last time I was running for a statewide race, if you look at my campaign finance report, you will see a large number of small donors. And that's not true for Democratic candidates or Republican candidates that are running for the state senate. But I have an extraordinarily wide grassroots network. And certainly, if you're running for a statewide race, you're going to bring in donors from all over the state. That's the nature of statewide races.
I believe that was for the last time you ran for state senate, though.
No.
We'll agree to disagree. Very quickly, marriage equality, the Seventh Circuit, again, making a lot of news this year. Struck down, or Judge Crabb in Madison struck down Wisconsin's ban on gay marriage, and I believe the Seventh Circuit affirmed that decision. So, very quickly, we've got very little time left in this hour. Your thoughts on gay marriage, for it or against it? Mel Pittman.
I'm opposed to gay marriage. It's against the laws of God, and it's also morally laws of nature. If people want to have close, friendly relationship with a person of the same sex, there's no problem with that and issues like that. But I believe that marriage is intended to be one man and one woman, and I support what we currently have in the Constitution today.
All right. Senator Vinehout.
You know, this angers me. People should be able to love and marry whoever they do love. And anybody that's a dairy farmer knows that. How do you tell a cow when a cow's in heat? You tell because the other cow is jumping her. So to tell me it's against God and against nature is just like, honey, you haven't been to the barnyard lately.
Candidates in the November 4th general election for the seat in Wisconsin's 31st state Senate district. We heard from incumbent Democrat Kathleen Vinehout of Alma, who has served in the Senate since first winning the election in the fall of 2006. She now seeks a third four-year term. Her Republican challenger is Mel Pittman, a Plum City area farmer and former member of the Pierce County Board of Supervisors. The 31st state Senate district includes all or parts of Trempealeau, Jackson, Buffalo, Pepin, Pierce, Eau Claire, and Dunn counties, and includes the communities of Trempealeau, Galesville, Arcadia, and Black River Falls. The candidates participated in a broadcast forum recorded earlier this week in Wisconsin Public Radio's Eau Claire studios, moderated by WPR's Rich Kramer. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to the candidates' websites and Wisconsin Vote. Our site also has archives of other recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives and photos, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.